Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kristen Lisenby, and my co-host, Kate Ballou. Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
Happy Mercury Day, Kate and listeners. What question did you grab from the witch web today?
Happy Mercury Day, Kristen, listeners. It's so good to see you. So good to be together. And great question about the question. We've had some witches writing in recently, listeners asking us for ways to honor Earth Day. So if that was you, thank you. And what do you think, Kristen?
I'm going to suggest go outside and unplug. That's the spell. bonus points if you can get your hands dirty, literally dirt beneath your fingernails through gardening, if you have some green space, or even just adding compost or nutrients to your house plants. Take a walk outside if weather permits. Talk to the trees. Learn the names of a native plant or two and their uses. Maybe scatter some non-invasive wildflower seeds for the bees. And, you know, obviously these are all things we can do any day, but I think unplugging from our routines / social media / the virtual self for a period so we can intentionally reconnect with the universe beneath our feet is a beautiful sentiment and spell for Earth Day. And in Lucia Starz's book, Everyday Magic, a pagan book of prayers, I was just looking through it before we recorded. I actually found a ritual for Earth Day. It was written by Halo Quinn, and it reads, "On Earth Day around the world, switch off your lights from 8 to 9 p.m. to raise awareness of your relationship to energy and Earth's resources. Honor the earth in the nourishing darkness of the soil, night, and dreams. A simple, practical ritual can look like turning off all electrical appliances in your home and then creating sacred space in your usual way. Feel the ground beneath you. Spend time contemplating the peace and darkness. Imagine you are a seed in the darkness. How does it feel? Slowly allow your seed self to sprout in the darkness and grow into a plant rooted in the earth. What do you grow into? What can you, as a being of the earth, offer back to Mother Earth? Light a candle and ponder the light held in the darkness. Make a pledge to honor the earth. Close up, make notes, and come back to your everyday awareness." I just think that's such a beautiful spell or prayer. And, you know, actually, I only recently discovered that each year Earth Day is assigned a theme. I don't know if you know that, Kate, but I didn't either. And this year, the theme is planet versus plastics. So I think setting an intention to go a little more plastic free is another beautiful way to honor Gaia. Kate, fellow dirt witch, my friend, what do you think?
Well, I love all of these ideas. Of course, this is a witch's podcast, so every day is Earth Day. But I do love it when the collective can rally behind an idea all at once on a day. Like, if we could all turn our lights off from 8 to 9, I love that. It's such a beautiful ritual. It just feels like a spell or a prayer. So I would say a ritual to celebrate Earth Day could be finding the altar of the earth that speaks to you, like whether that's a garden, a park, volunteering, picking up trash, a hike, donating money. Put your energy there as an offering. When we gift our presence, our attention, our energy, our compassion, our care, I think it's truly a spell for the world. And also, I love being here on Earth. I love Earth. So I'm going to make sure to tell Earth this. So if you'd like to join me in complimenting some trees and flowers, spending time with some herbs, some plant friends on Earth Day, please do. You're invited.
I love these spells. Earth as an altar, always listening. Mm-hmm. And our guest for today is also someone who believes in connecting and speaking with the animate and inanimate worlds. So would you like to introduce her?
Yes, so excited about this conversation. Amanda Paulson is a paranormal investigator, research, and medium based in the inland Pacific Northwest. She began ghost hunting in 2008 with a team in Montana and started her social media and blog, Pretty Effin' Spooky, in March 2019. Amanda has helped multiple media projects with paranormal research in relation to the Pacific Northwest, taught workshops on spirit communication, amassed hundreds of thousands of views, making spiritual-related content for the company Tamed Wild. In 2022, she wrote the Paranormal Emotive Touchpoint Theory and created the L Method, as well as began providing psychic channeled readings for the public. Amanda created the first Dark History Tour series for the Campbell House in association with the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture, and is in her second term as City at Large Representative Historic Preservationist for the Spokane Historic Landmarks Commission. She's been featured in the YouTube series Ghost Files, profiled in popular publications Apartment Therapy and The Inlander, and her personal writing published in Haunted Magazine and The Feminine Macabre, Volume 1.
Amanda joined us from her home via Zoom. Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
Amanda, welcome back to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, it's so nice to see you. Mm-hmm. Also, happy Aries season. If I remember correctly, you're an Aries sun. Is that right?
I am. Yeah, my birthday's on April 19th, so I'm at the very end of Aries season.
Ah, happy almost solar return.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know you've been on Magic and Alchemy several times over the past four seasons, but for our new listeners, would you like to introduce yourself and your work in your own words?
My name is Amanda Paulson. I'm based out of Spokane, Washington, and I go by the name Pretty Effin' Spooky online. I'm a paranormal investigator, traveler, medium. Lots of things, lots of new words that I've adopted over the years. But primarily, I am a paranormal investigator based in the Pacific Northwest.
Love that. And I'd love to hear what you two both think about this, but I feel like spring is such a haunted season. Like, I know we think of autumn as being haunted, but there's something so spooky about spring, especially with this eclipse season. So many planets in Aries, like, I don't know, just definitely a force out there. But do you have any new ghost stories to share? Any sort of insights into the hauntings of spring?
Yeah, I totally agree. Spring is very spooky. I think it also, I'm sure you guys will agree, but it goes into like that, the liminality of it all too, like the transitionary, you know, crossing the threshold from winter into spring and watching all the flowers bloom. I feel like it's kind of spooky in nature, but, gosh, here I mostly lately in terms of spirits and the paranormal, I've just been dealing with a lot of the spirits I've been hunkered down with during the winter inside of my own apartment. So I've been filling it with haunted items and things like that. And so now I'm kind of moving into nicer weather and probably going to be investigating outside of my own home more soon. But for now, I'm just dealing with all of the ghosts inside of my house, which are quite a few at this point.
And I know the word haunted really conjures up, you know, different things for different people, but how do you understand this word, haunted?
That's a great question. I've actually never been asked that before. let me ponder on it for a second. It seems simple, but I guess I don't know how to articulate the way that I see haunted. I feel like haunted is way bigger to me than it is portrayed, especially in paranormal media. So I don't think haunted has to mean, you know, possessed by the spirit of a deceased person. I think haunted can mean, I don't know, like persistent energy of any kind, that like lingers beyond and outside of ourselves, I guess. But I've never actually had to articulate that before. So hopefully that made any sense at all.
I love thinking about that. That's so interesting.
Yeah. I feel like I talk about haunted with the term haunted and like the term ghost with my paranormal community a lot. And it's always in terms of the soul of a deceased person or maybe an animal if we're really getting wild with it. But I feel like I use like the term haunted a lot beyond that meaning. And I guess I use it loosely without even knowing what I mean, but I guess I mean whatever I want to mean in the day, but I feel haunted a lot.
I pulled up the etymology for it if you two want.
Yeah.
Ooh, yes.
Okay. So it's Middle English in the sense to frequent a place, from Old French hanter, of Germanic origin, which might be distantly related to home. Hmm. That's beautiful.
Wow. That's interesting. And I think one, I didn't quite get it right in terms of etymology, but it's the persistence of energy, I guess, is somewhat on par with that. But I like the home inclusion. That's interesting. Wow.
It looks like it switched in 1711 to a haunted house, or to meaning like visited by ghosts. But before that 13th century, it's habitual to busy oneself, to take part in, to be familiar with, maybe even related to Old Norse, to bring home.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was thinking about it because I follow you on social media, like so many people. And we're going to talk about your haunted collection that you have in your house a little bit. But I was thinking specifically about the antique necklace that you brought home, the haunted necklace that you wore for 1 week, and you documented your experience, which was so interesting. But you talked a little bit about it being perhaps cursed instead of haunted. And so I was curious how you view cursed versus haunted, or if there's an overlap. I thought it was such an interesting conversation you were having about it.
Yeah. It was interesting. I hadn't run into that yet until that necklace, but when I mentioned that I thought it was feeling cursed more than haunted, I was referring to, I guess, the fact that it felt like its intention was to affect the person who owned it or who was wearing it in that case, versus haunted, I would think kind of exists on its own, irregardless of who owns it or who is doing what with it. But cursed felt like it was intended to intentionally affect a living person, and haunted. Like, I don't think it was haunted in the sense that, like, I sit it here on my desk behind me and there's a ghost in my room now, and that ghost exists with or without me being here. But more like, more like it's just kind of imbued with energy that's meant to affect me, and not be so intelligent as to be haunted by a spirit, kind of how I saw it. But it was very interesting, wearing that necklace for a week. And it's interesting too, because you have the element with that necklace in particular. I had bought it. They had put like a paranormal disclosure on it, so the seller knew that there was a story of it being, quote, haunted, and they were warning people, whoever decided to buy it, that it was haunted. And so I already had this idea that it was supposed to be haunted in my head, and I kind of wish I didn't have that. On one hand, I'm glad that they said something. I'm glad I could go buy it, and then I could be like a steward of it. But on the other hand, I wish I wasn't like predisposed to knowing that, because then there's this in the back of my head like expecting it to provide in that way. But to my happy surprise, the way that it ended up manifesting in my life as a haunted object was different than I expected. So it made it seem all the more real, because it didn't like adhere to the expectation that I had set on it when I bought it.
Interesting. It makes me think about when we were at the Samhain retreat and you and Shelby went to the antique store to like look for haunted objects, and the ones that you brought back, it was like a bear with like a drum that was pretty spooky. And then there was the doll that we like kept in the cabinet away from everyone because everyone was so upset by it.
Yeah. That's interesting. That was such a fun, interesting time.
Yeah. I mean, that bear, when I touched it, it gave me the worst headache that I've had in like a really long time. And I don't know if I was just tired or what, but it was really impactful. Like when you and Shelby went, how did you sort of like use your intuition to pick those objects?
What's really interesting about that bear is that Shelby's husband, Jason, actually found that bear. I like saw it, but I wasn't drawn to it. I just kind of like glanced over it, but he was like, I think this bear, I swear, I'm pretty sure, I'm 99% sure that's how it went, because I don't feel like I picked it out, which I found more meaning in. I was like, oh, you're feeling something about it. Okay, let's get it. I almost bought
very
something.
Very intuitive Pisces man.
Yeah. I almost bought something else, but then I saw that and I was like, you know what? You're right. And then Shelby and I saw the doll that she bought. We both saw it. That doll in the store, I actually was like, I cannot buy that. That feels too much for me. And I needed to fly back with whatever it was I bought. So I was like really cautious about bringing in it. So also I think like the doll I knew was like interesting and had some kind of energy attachment to it, but not to the degree that like that doll, her like little, that little tiny doll did. It felt like I was like, I don't feel safe flying with that. And then we walked around and she went back for it. So it was interesting. And, you know, a lot of people, surprisingly in the paranormal community will poo-poo this idea of like going into an antique store and being able to pick out something haunted. And I just find that so silly, because
weird.
Yeah. I think it's just, I don't know. I think people get uncomfortable when you kind of, I can't put words to it, but I think people just get uncomfortable with like that control aspect of like, well, you can't just go in and find a ghost. And it's like, I think you can though. Like, I don't know why not. I mean, these things were owned by so many people and have been through so many places, and maybe I'll give them that. Maybe those objects in antique stores have like a lot of energy, like a lot of chaos to them because they've been in the store or like been handled by so many people. So maybe people don't like that. But I think, I mean, if something calls to me, I'm going to buy it. And at this point, I mean, I have like a really scary looking painting behind my shoulder that was.
Oh, yeah, I can see that one.
Yeah, I've been eyeing him.
That's like by far the most active thing that I have besides the couple necklaces. But that was $2.99 at Value Village. I saw that with my boyfriend and I walked into the store and I was like, oh my God, I want that. It was like right, the paintings are right in front of the Value Village. And I saw it immediately when I bought it. A guy walked by and he's like, oh my God, I just put that out. It's so scary. But I was like, you just get a vibe. And I was like, I know that this has something to it. And just because I found it at a thrift store doesn't like negate the fact that there's, something attached to it. So I don't know. That's my thoughts on that.
People put so much of like their own energy into their objects. Like they're living their daily life around their objects. Like I'm just looking at my office right now. Like when I'm gone, if someone ends up with these items, like even all of my grandparents' items up here, like we keep things like that for a reason because of that sort of like vessel or artifact element.
That's so true. That's such a good point. Even with our own things, especially if you're like sentimental or you like keep things from your family or whatever. Like I have a lot of like rocks and knickknacks and things that I've like given so much meaning to, that like, yeah, that would probably be haunted if I were to pass today and it was all donated to the thrift store. I bet that would be weird for whoever picked it up. So yeah, I don't know. I definitely think and like finding those things during the Samhain retreat. Yeah, I mean, we tried really hard. That was a huge antique store too. And then we tried really hard to find a couple things that could like bring in a different kind of energy to the group. And the group did a great job at being okay with that. I don't think everyone loved it.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty wild. I just keep thinking about the like interesting voice recordings and like some of the other spooky things that happened there. Kristen, we missed you.
Like, I know. I was like, wait, do you have a story to tell for those of us who weren't there?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, when
so
I think
many.
About that.
Yeah.
I like objects.
I just a quick story that I think about and tell a lot is when we were doing the spirit box with the group and I saw a tooth and it ended up being Shelby's tooth and the ghost was telling Shelby to go to the dentist. And I didn't know, but Shelby had a dentist appointment in like 2 weeks and she had been having a toothache. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was fun. That just goes to show the level of weird, like weird stuff that was happening. But that group.
Yeah, it's not what you expect.
No, that group was so fun and like open to, it's can be hard to bring in ghost hunting to that kind of like space in a way that makes sense. And I feel like I feel like we all work together to find like a sweet spot to bring in the fun and the spookiness of ghost hunting into, you know, that kind of like spiritual space. It felt cool.
Yeah, it definitely changed my perspective on some things, especially just using a spirit box and like trying some of that out. Like in the past, that would not have been me. So it was nice to like have that container to try that in. It's interesting. I'm curious, like in the comments, do you often see people telling you to like clear or like banish things from your objects? Like, do you get lectured about that? I feel like when I'm trolling around the internet, people are like, you need to smoke cleanse that. You need to do this. Like, you need to do that. And I wonder how you deal with that with these objects.
I do get a lot of comments like that. I get a good amount from just random strangers, maybe followers, but I probably get it most from peers, which is interesting. And something that I am personally trying to work out a way to like handle, because my whole journey online has been all about being really transparent with my journey as a student. And like, I think we're always students. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to get to this place where I'm like the world's best ghost hunter and I know everything. Like, that defeats the whole purpose of it. But I'm especially open online about learning and being open to growing and being and leading with like my insecurities or things that I'm working on. And with that comes this kind of assumption that I don't know what I'm doing and or that I need help, that I'm in need of something from my peers and that they know best. And that's been difficult because it's especially in the last like year and a half in particular, I think I took a huge step forward. And this, like, I know we'll talk about it, but this goes along with, you know, the channel drawings that I've been doing and some of the different things that I've been working on to grow myself as a practitioner and also as a paranormal investigator. And they don't know all of that. But I have stopped. It's given me pause. And I've been like, well, that's not what I believe I need to do. And how do I respectfully communicate that to people I respect, like to people I trust? I know that what they're telling me to do works for them, but I'm like, that is not how I operate. So I get a lot of people who are like, oh, you need, like with the, you know, the necklaces or whatever, oh, you need to put an oil on it, you need to smoke cleanse it, you need to sweet friends. Like, I had a friend, I made a video about it and joked about it, that she sent me holy water and Palo Santo and like, and I tried it for fun, you know, for a video. But after that, actually, I felt like now that locket in particular, I can't even tell if it has anything attached to it anymore. And that makes me sad and was not my like intent. Mm-hmm. I had always wanted to kind of, again, be a steward of like haunted things or ghosts. Like I like the concept. Shelby and I have talked a lot about like being a haunted hotel, or like being a place that ghosts can rest and can come in and out of. That's my goal. I want to work with them. I don't want to eliminate them. That has never been my intent. But a lot of other people are surprisingly, even with lots of experience, it's just like their belief that it should just be eliminated or like diminished in some way. And I just don't agree with that. So I don't know. All that to say, that was long-winded, but all that to say, I get a lot of those comments. I'm still trying to figure out a respectful way to say, I don't want to do that. And I learned my lesson just recently. I'm just like, right, like off the heels of like, I'm only a couple months removed of like a huge lesson in how to listen to my peers and that kind of stuff.
Mm. I think that's so interesting about the eliminating all ghosts. It's like, what happens if all of us are going around getting rid of them? Like, do we get new ghosts? Like, what are the conditions for like energy and haunting to like manifest in our lives? Like, I just think about New York City, right? Like, it's a city that's layered and constantly changing. But if you get rid of all the old buildings, it loses its character. Do you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it's a weird analogy, but it's like, if you get rid of all of the energy, all of the spirits, all of the stories, you're basically just left with like a new build brutalist concrete apartment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one thing I've always really appreciated about your methods, Amanda, is that I feel like you go into everything so respectful, like wanting to get to know these haunted objects. Even with your painting, like I see you in videos, like you talk to him, you act, you know, like he's a person, you treat him as if he's really there. And I always thought that was really beautiful. And even with that necklace you wore, when you were using the holy water, you were saying, you know, I'm not trying to banish anything. I'm trying to transmute this energy into something maybe a little bit more peaceful. And I just think that's really beautiful. And I think it's really genuine to you as a person as well, because you don't see as much of that in the paranormal community. I'm seeing it more now. But in the past, I feel like nobody's really tried to get to know the ghosts.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. That there are so few people trying to get to know the ghosts. And still, like mm-hmm. somebody just said to me recently, I can't remember who it was. They sent a comment or something, and they said, "I had some activity in my house today, so I cleansed." This was like a comment on one of my posts. And I was like, cleansed what though? Like, like, did you cleanse out the ghost, or did you feel like you needed to be cleansed? Cause then we're talking about something different, you know, but yeah. And then in terms of like transmuting the energy, that's something I've been trying to work with as well. I think I'm due for like a course in alchemy or something. Cause I'm really just throwing spaghetti at a wall. I don't know what I'm doing in terms of that. And again, I'm so bored with like what I don't know. And I probably need to be more forward with what I do know. But yeah, I just find it like fascinating. And also it gives me more fulfillment. Honestly, it just gives me like more purpose if I'm like working with spirit energy. And I kind of approach it like venerating ancestors. And I suppose have kind of like allowed these kind of random spirits to become like community ancestors in a way, and have let them come into my online community and my Pretty Effin' Spooky community. And like, they have become almost an ancestor of that space. And then I treat them like that. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with it.
Mm, it just gave me like the truth bumps a yeah. little bit. Like, I love that.
I do too.
I think was it Perdita Finn that was talking a little bit about how like, even if they're not your ancestors, they're someone's ancestors, and it's mm-hmm. more about being like a part of a collective and like community care in like a different way. kind of gets rid of that notion of like the nuclear family, because if we go back far enough, we're all sort of more related than we think.
Absolutely.
Hey witches, Shelby here, and I'm the creatrix behind Tamed Wild. I wanted to pop in here real quick to let you know about my podcast, The Moon in Carolina. On this one-woman show, I share experiences and insight related to personal growth, life challenges, manifesting, and leaning into spirituality. My top three episodes so far have been Bankruptcy, Borrowing, and Talking to the Universe, where I shared my story of financial ruin and how I climbed out. Breaking Up with Jesus, my journey from a Southern Baptist to a practicing pagan, and Astrology for Manifesting, where I share how personifying the planets has helped me understand their energies in my life and in my chart. If you're looking for a new podcast to add to your library, I hope you'll give mine a try. Now, back to the lovely Kristen and Kate and this episode of Magic and Alchemy.
So I've been admiring, you know, your beautiful, weird, haunted collection. You know, I can see a few pieces behind you, Amanda. But do you have like a favorite haunted find or maybe a new addition that you're working with right now that you especially are drawn to?
I do. As far as new, so no offense to my guy back here. He's just been around for a while. But, and I know, I don't think you guys post the video, so I don't know why I'm pointing, but for you guys, I'm pointing. there's this picture behind me of a fire, and it's matted in a frame. It's from 1980, so it looks like it, but it's a picture of a cabin in Priest Lake, Idaho, on fire, and nobody passed away in the fire. I looked it up before I purchased it. I think that would be macabre if I bought it when somebody passed, but anyway, it's a really, really neat, beautiful photo. And I bought it. I even have a video of me finding it at the thrift store because I want to try to record like when I find things of interest. And in that video, it was just this picture alone. Since I brought it home and hung it on my wall here, which gets a lot of sunlight, it showed a double exposed photo on the bottom right corner of a couple in a wedding cake that had transposed onto it, which is super, super cool. And I posted about that recently. A lot of people, the comments were quick to say it's a double exposure. I'm like, I know that, but it's super cool. And I had wondered if it would, I didn't think it would be haunted necessarily, but I had wondered if maybe it could act as sort of a like tether to maybe that event or like a way to connect to something in relation to it. I also mentioned online that this keeps falling off of the wall. Granted, I did have it stuck up there with mounting tape. It was supposed to be enough mounting tape to hold like 25 pounds. So I don't know why it didn't work, but it kept falling down. And then when I finally made a video about it falling down is when I turned it around and I noticed the couple and the wedding cake on there and the synchronicity of like all of that happening at once. So it was like, it fell down. It was finally the time that I happened to turn my camera on. And it was the first moment I noticed this double exposed photo on it. I was like, huh, this is trying to tell me a story. And again, I wouldn't consider this like haunted per se. I don't know if it is, but I was like, it's trying to tell a story here. And I like finally uncovered the story. And that was just like last week. And it was super, super cool. So that's my favorite new thing that I have.
I love that.
Yeah, I saw that video and I just thought like the juxtaposition of like this fire, like this really tragic event with like this wedding photo was like really interesting as well.
Yeah, I thought it was super cool. I think it kind of, every now and then, you know, the bummer about short form video is that like the idea you're trying to convey like doesn't always hit. It doesn't always get across to people. And I think that that was like a miss for me for a lot of people who consumed it. I was like, this is very cool and weird. Like, why don't you guys see how weird this is? Like, I'm not saying a ghost pushed it off the wall and then magically appeared in the photo. Like I'm well aware of how all of those things can happen. But yeah, I thought like, yeah, the cute like wedding photo. And it looks like it was an older wedding photo than the photo is. So the photo is from 1980. The wedding, I looked closely. It looks like maybe it's early 80s, but maybe like late 70s, because it's frilly, really frilly mm-hmm. outfits. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It looked like late 70s, but it's also possible that it was in an antique mall, like in a booth. So it was somebody's booth hanging on a wall. When I bought it, it didn't have any photos in the frame. So I'm like, either at some point in the booth, it had a photo on it, or it was all the way back when it was owned by either the person who took the photo or somebody who bought the photo. I don't know. And then like stuck a wedding photo in there. It's interesting to think about how that could have happened. Cause would they have had to have put the photo backwards? I don't know how that works. Like for the photo to transpose onto it, would it had to have been facing on? And then I was like, maybe it was just like in a pile of stuff for a long time and like just had a photo just sitting on there. But it's interesting. And it's weird to think that I'll never know who that couple is. Like they could very well like still be alive. And I have a photo of them for some reason. That's so weird.
You said you looked up the fire though. Do you happen to know who owned it? Like in those records, is there a way to look at the ownership and see if it's the couple?
I could do that. The fire is of a cabin at a resort. So I'd have to look up the owner of the resort, but I absolutely could do that and have meant to do that, but just haven't yet. So I could.
So interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I could, you know, something that I could do when the weather's nice is I could go out to that resort with that, bring it to them and see if they can help me try to figure it out, maybe point, like connect the dots somehow. But super cool. I love a mystery, you know, not everything that I own has to be like super duper haunted. Like there's a person attached to it and it's walking around my house, scaring me at night. Like that, I just find that's like, back to your like question of like, what does haunted mean? Like that's where the definition gets like more broad and kind of like haunted by a mystery, or what was the etymology? Bringing me home. I don't know. Whatever it was, but
yeah, it's like, I don't know, it feels very poetic to me, like just mm-hmm. like the mysteries of the human experience, like that we can have these big moments like a wedding or a marriage or something that burns down, and somehow that they can be like woven together and like might have meaning, and that someone might unearth it like years and years later and not even know us and wonder about us, you know?
Yeah. That is very poetic. You should mm-hmm. write a poem about it. I'm not
layer it in next to the for the next person.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. I should double expose more onto it and then donate it to the thrift store and just pass it on and on and on.
I feel like I've seen like posts in the past of like people finding albums at like a Goodwill and trying to like get them to a family and like things like this. Like it's so interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
I would love to talk a little bit about your channel drawings now, if we could switch gears a little bit. Do you want to share about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to partake or like get a drawing, which I'm so excited
for. I
have
it right here. <That's beautiful. laughs> Listeners, I'll post a photo of it. It's very, very, very cool.
Yeah. So looking at them like that is so interesting because to the listeners, the channel drawings that I do, I'm blindly drawing while channeling the living. Like the subconscious of the living, trying to like pull messages or whatever needs to come forward. And so the drawings end up a lot of scribbles and are up to interpretation. But I also try to find images in there while I'm drawing and add some color and add some shape to it. But I started doing these channel drawings. I actually started channeling and drawing a while ago. I need to pinpoint exactly what the date was, but I feel like I'm going on like 2 years of trying this or like developing the method that I'm using. But I just started offering to the public channel drawings in, I guess it would be the Samhain retreat at Tamed Wild in October of last year. And I'm still doing it. I just dropped some spots. I'm only doing a very limited amount per month because it takes a lot out of me, but it's been a really cool way for me to offer my own gift of, you know, being able to enter trance and subconsciously read for the living, which is different, I think, than people expected from me because I do all of this work with spirit or spirits. And there's this kind of like expected pipeline of paranormal investigator to medium that happens in these spaces that is honestly not met with much kindness most of the time. Because I think, especially with media involvement, there's a lot of like assumption that you're doing it for, I don't know, online consumption or like for attention. But I just realized over the years of paranormal investigating, specifically with the spirit box, that I was able to enter trance very easily, that was something I was gifted at. And that while I was entering this trance and listening to the spirit box, I was actually channeling messages for the living. Like I joked about, I saw Shelby's tooth and could tell that she needed to go to the dentist. Like things like that are not necessarily from a ghost. I don't know where they're coming from. Maybe sometimes they're coming from a ghost, but like I just realized, and you know, this goes back years, even back to, I visited the Conjuring House years ago and I was with a group of like 10 ghost hunters. And I wasn't confident enough then to speak on the things that I was seeing in trance, but I saw an investigator's mom come forward. And in my mind's eye, I could see her standing behind him and just standing there with a hand on his shoulder. And it wasn't until afterward that I came to him. I didn't know him at all. And I said, did your mom pass away? And he was like, yes. And even then, I don't think I even told him then. I was so scared to like dive into that side of things. But I realized, like, I'm kind of going on a tangent. I'm still learning to like articulate all of this. But I guess all in all, I'm learning and recognizing that I have a gift for doing this kind of reading, which is again like channeling the subconscious of the living. Sometimes spirits come through, sometimes they don't, but whatever I'm doing is accurate and meaningful to people and gives people a lot of value, and so I'm following that and I'm still offering them today, and I have like 12 of them on deck to do this month, which I'm very honored and excited to do. And I think I'm reaching like having done 100 of them, I think, at this point. Uh-huh. And that's not including readings that if anyone listening happens to have been following me for a while, I used to do these like readings online where I said, you know, leave a comment or an emoji on a post and I'll read you just based on that emoji or that comment. I'll like give you whatever first comes to mind. And I did hundreds of those. And what I was doing was kind of testing myself to see, I don't know if this is even healthy or a good thing to do. I don't have a mentor. I'm also currently on the hunt for a mentor, like, you know, like I'm sending it out into the universe. I need somebody to help me like, like find a path for this. But, you know, I was like testing myself and like working on it and making sure that I was onto something with what I was doing. And again, it ended up being something that I was very talented at. So yeah, mm-hmm. That's where I'm at today.
They're so, so stunning. Can I read what you wrote on mine? Because I just think it's like such a cool, like it's a poem. You said you didn't write poems, but it's like, it's such a poem.
Yeah.
Through the room, also heard the word topal, which is Turkish in origin. I left the room backwards to see you. You were pointing to the sky and to the ground, but I saw someone reposition your hands. As above, so below. Rain, an emphasis on the weather. I heard Florida as well. Woman in a dress, man with a mustache, maple seed. It's so beautiful. Wow. I don't know.
That's funny. I forgot. So those ones I was doing for the retreat, because I had to do so many of them on the spot. That is like more of a stream of consciousness of like exactly how I was journeying. And now when I do them for people from home, I'm able to take those notes because I write notes during it. But I'm able to take that and then write it. And I write it into like a letter, basically. So I write them like a letter and give them like a more detailed, like, because also from like practitioner to practitioner, you know, to, it's kind of like a dream. Like, you know, you could look up, I think we talked then too about like the maple seed and like what some of these things mean. But for people who are getting a reading, like through my website, I try to expand on that and, or explain, you know, look into what this means for you culturally, or I give them some, you know, meaning, or background to the things I see, because they do come through a lot of the time, like symbols or, like symbology. And that is something, I want to, I mean, the study of symbology as a whole could go on forever. I could study that for so long, and still know nothing, but, that's really where, like, where the magic is happening. Cause I explain it like I'm traveling through the dream space of the living. I've said that online before, but it's like I'm having waking dreams for people because they come through so like metaphorically or like so kind of strange. And also the way that it shifts and changes through the, I guess you could call the visions or whatever that I'm having, is very much like a dream. Cause it, one second you're somewhere and the next second you're somewhere else. So it's been very interesting and it's cool to hear yours again. I forgot what I had written, but I like that.
Yeah. And the use of color, I find very cool too. Like, is that, that's an intuitive sort of process and practice of like taking the visions that you have and then putting them onto the page.
Yeah. And that's all. Yeah. That's also, I try every ounce of these drawings that I'm doing, I'm trying to do with intention and with intuition. And so the colors I'm picking are like, for instance, maybe sometimes I find the, like a face in the drawing or a spirit is coming through, but I might want to use a different color than like a skin tone color. I hope that people who are getting the drawings know to like look into that as well, that I'm called to those colors in particular for a reason. So, yeah, it's been really fun to play with. I just bought some new markers recently, some new colors. I bought like moss and carnelian, yeah, and lavender. I'm excited. And I bought those after the last group of people ordered readings. And so I was like, I wonder if I'm, like, I was able to actually go, I had already read all of their names and seen who it was. And I was like, I wonder if I picked those colors intuitively for them. But yeah, I mean, with my channel drawings, because I'm not meeting with people in person, I loved meeting with people in person at the retreat. And I would love to do that, except for I don't have the access to that. These people are buying them online. So I am asking people to just send a description of themselves. And so then I have their name and I have a description of themselves, but it's just to kind of connect better with them, to imagine what they look like, but also it's very telling and like very vulnerable for people to explain themselves and what they look like, I think tells a lot more about people than they realize. So that's really what I'm doing when I say, can you please give me a brief description of yourself? Like just a sentence about what you look like is, I feel like opens the door wide open for me to be able to connect to people. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I once had a long distance reading and I had to write something similar in my own handwriting and put it into an envelope with a printed photo of me to send to this woman. And it was so intimate, the process of doing that. I was like, I just, it was just so powerful. And like in an unexpected way, I like sat down to write it and then I like had to go get a stamp and like send it and put it off. And I was like, this person knows me better than like half of my friends in New York now.
That's cool. That's really cool. That would freak me out though. Kind of, I don't know that I have enough trust to do that. Like, I'd be like, what are you going to do with my picture?
I was 23. I was in a tight spot. I was like, it can't get worse. But Amanda, for anyone else who's like self-taught or sort of like working through this, that like their own intuition or channeling process, that's listening to this right now, do you have any tools or advice for someone starting out on this journey?
Absolutely. My best and first piece of advice is to talk about it. And was the biggest obstacle for me starting with this was my shyness, and like I was so guarded and afraid to talk about it, even though I had already opened the door. I had already come out of the door and been like, I believe in ghosts, I believe in UFOs and Sasquatch and all this weird stuff. And you'd think I'd be totally fine with talking about this stuff, but I was apprehensive. But the second I started like being more vulnerable with it and talking to people about it and talking about the process and almost like sort of workshopping it out loud to my trusted loved ones or even to the internet in safe spaces, not only did it like help me personally to be able to keep moving forward with it, but it also, I think, in some way deepened my connection with whatever source I was touching, you know, like whatever I am doing. And I say that like I don't know what's going on. And I just want to be cautious of ever like pretending like I absolutely do know what's going on, because I just think that it's meant to be sort of mysterious and like I don't know the rules of it. But I think when I started talking to people about it more openly, the connection became stronger and it just kind of snowballed from there. And so basically, you know, create community and talk with your community about your journey. If you're trying to get into reading for people, whatever it be, tarot reading or channeling or even ghost hunting, lean into the connections that you have around you. That's something, again, I've struggled with, but it's been hugely important to my journey. So that's the best advice I have.
And where do you think that apprehension came from that you were mentioning? Because you said, you know, you can say, I believe in aliens and Sasquatch and all these things. So where did that other apprehension come from, do you think?
I think it's twofold. I think part of it came from my religious upbringing. And, you know, my family knows about what I do, but the ghost Sasquatch UFO part of it is a little more, it's taken less serious. And I think they look at that as more of a fun, silly thing I do for the internet. But when it comes to talking about reading for people in the way that I'm doing, then that gets into my own personal gifts. And that gets into a lot of like sticky conversation in that religious space. I was raised Baptist, so it's kind of assumed, like, it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't come from a good place, they think. But and then second to that, I think it's also like, it's like the part of it that it's so personal. I don't know how to word it. It's like having to trustful into like strangers and just be like, I'm going to, it's so vulnerable to say, I have these thoughts in my head about you or about this, whatever this is. And I think I'm right. I think this incredible paranormal thing is happening. And to take that like jump to like trust fall into it is so scary, because you could be wrong. You could be ridiculed. You could be embarrassed. And I have been embarrassed. I've been embarrassed with peers and with strangers. There have been times where I'm not spot on, but then like slowly over time, it comes back around and I realize that I maybe didn't have like the resources or the words to explain what I was saying. But it made sense later on or something. Like it's just been like such a process to like trust myself, basically, and then to trust other people to not ridicule this part of myself. It's all about trust there, I think. So I don't want to like be condemned by my Baptist upbringing, and then two, it's vulnerable and scary to trust people with this part of myself.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like we've talked about this like a lot on the podcast, the sort of like, quote unquote, imposter syndrome. I'm always like, imposter at what? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But it's really, really hard to do.
Especially in like, the biggest bird just flew by. I think it was a pigeon, but that was a massive bird. But it was cool. I was like, whoa. But yeah, especially like in these spiritual spaces, there's a lot of, I'll say this and I'll say it quick, but like there is a lot of, there's a magpie, by the way. But anyway, there's like also a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on like how you should get from point A to point B in mediumship or in spiritual practices. And like a lot of people think there should be training, there should be mentorship, there should be, you know, stepping stones that you need to take. And Kate, I think we've talked about this in terms of like your writing school too. It makes me think of that. Like just deciding that like you, to just do the thing, you know, and like trusting that like I'm doing it in an authentic and genuine way and in a way that makes sense. And I'm mitigating the harm that I could cause to people, you know, to the best of my ability. Like I'm not harming anyone. I'm not doing anything wrong. But there are a lot of people who think I am inherently doing it wrong because I didn't go to school or like have some kind of certification or whatever. And that muddies things too. And that I'm still undecided on like where I stand with all of that. I think if I was presented with the opportunity, like I was joking, I'm looking for a mentor, if I'm presented with the opportunity to further my studies or to, you know, to be better at this, then I would absolutely take it. But a lot of the certifications and trainings out there is a lot of money. And I think is not accessible to a lot of people. And even if it was accessible to me, I struggle doing it because it just feels like a something that's not accessible enough to people. And so, I don't know, there's that like kind of complicated aspect of it too. And even in the paranormal community, you kind of run into like this like idea that you have to follow certain rules to get certain places. And I just don't really agree with that very often. So I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
It's tough. Just always hear Robin Rose Bennett in my head. She's just like, don't shit on yourself. Don't shit on other people. Don't like, I always love that.
I love that. I love
there is no should.
Yeah. I love like your, would it be called a mentorship that you did with Robin Rose Bennett or,
like an apprenticeship.
Apprenticeship. Yeah. That kind of stuff is awesome. And just a matter of, don't they say like, what's the saying? Like a mentor will find you when, or whatever you find
when,
it
yeah. when the student is ready or something like that.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
And I mean, I did really meet Robin in a pretty serendipitous way. Like I had to move to New York to work at this like apothecary doing events. Her and Pam Grossman were in the basement doing an event and like handed out mugwort branches to everyone. And I was like sitting there in the basement of this like old apothecary, which used to be a very sort of haunted Lower East Side bar. And like in the 80s and 90s. And then like years and years went by. And I was just like vaguely aware. And then suddenly like was like, this has to happen now. But I had known her work for like four years and just was not really ready to do that. Would not have been ready to do that. And then got on a Zoom call with her and she was just like, well, there's a wait list. And then she emailed me later and she was like, oh, look, you're in. So it's lucky, really lucky.
I mean, I sort of appreciate, Amanda, that you're not, you know, following the same path that so many people have taken before you. I think that's, you know, what sets you apart from a lot of the other paranormal investigators I've followed over the years. Even just like with your channeling method, which I think you call it the L method. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen anyone do that before. And I love that you give credit of how you came up with this concept and how you're working with it. So yeah. I kind of am on board with not following the rules. in that scenario.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And I am obviously, at the end of the day, I'm also on board with not following the rules. Like, I'm still doing it.
Aries queen, we love it.
Yeah, I still just end up doing Aries sun and Sagittarius rising. So it all makes a lot of sense when you know more about me astrologically.
That is just a pioneering vibe.
It gets me in a lot of trouble, but like I'm like, if I can help people and if I can connect with people, again, I'm not harming people, then I'm going to go for it. And I'm going to follow my gut on it. So I'm a little, I was going to call myself a little SHIT, but I don't know if we can cuss on here, but I'm a little ding dong. But anyway, I appreciate you saying that. I don't like following rules, so for the most part.
Well, plus it's like, if you're not seeing like a path that feels right to you, like why take it? Why fit yourself into that box? Like it's the scary and brave thing to do, to be like, this is how I see it. And then until I bump into other people who see it this way too, or like at least have like a Venn diagram of overlap, it's like you might as well just keep going.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what has happened. It's like, with the L method, it was bred from the SS method, which is like sensory deprivation. And I was like, and this will work a different way for me. And just having to trust myself in like following what works for me. A lot of people say that it's like corny kind of, but I mean, you really have to just like go for what works best for you. It's not like a rule across the board. It's not the same for everyone. So, and the same goes for the paranormal community. Like you don't have to do it like how everyone else is doing it if it doesn't work for you like that. And there's, Lord knows there's no rules to paranormal phenomena. Like, or if there is, we don't know them. I don't think. I don't believe that we are that all knowing. I don't think we ever will be. I don't think that's the point.
I'll never forget at my grandpa's funeral, the priest who I actually really respect, got up there and he was like, all right, guys, I'm going to give this speech now, but just so you know, like, none of us knows what happens after we die. And then if anyone tells you that they do, they're lying to you. And I was like, wow, refreshing opening. My grandpa would have loved that. Let's go.
I love that.
But it's true. No one knows. So it's just like you have to make your own interpretations and embrace your own mysteries.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Amanda, we are nearing the end of our time together here. Sadly, I know that Kristen and I could just talk about hauntings with you forever, but what are you currently excited about? What are you looking forward to? What's on the horizon this spring for your work?
Well, I am excited for my birthday on April 19th, but as far as my work goes, I just spoke at the Oregon Ghost Conference. I just debuted my lecture, Odd Emotions, Investigating Yourself. And so I'm excited to bring that to other conferences here in the Pacific Northwest. Dates and locations to be announced. But you can find more information about that on my website, prettyeffandspooky.com. So I'm just excited to do more channel drawings and follow this all of these cool things that we talked about today.
Amazing. And do you have any final words of wisdom to share with our listeners today? And where can listeners find your work?
Final words of wisdom. It's Aries season, so I'm feeling like chaotic. Like I want to be like, there are no rules. There are no rules. Don't listen to anyone. You can do whatever you want. Yeah, actually, I'm going to, that's it. That's my words of wisdom. I'm going to leave it at that. And then you can find me at prettyfnspooky.com and at prettyfnspooky on all social media platforms. It's FN, not the real word, just FN, prettyfnspooky.
Thank you so much, Amanda and listeners, for joining us today on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kate Ballou and Kristen Lisenby. You can find us online at K8Ballou and at East and Alchemy. Send us all of your questions and comments or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram at Tamed Wild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us back here in 2 weeks for another magical conversation. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it. So mote it be or something better. Until next time.